You wanna play rock? Say hello to my new friend!
What the hell's going on out here?
Ooh, that's a bingo.
888-971-SAGE. 888-971-7243. Larry Elder, ReliefFactor.com studio. Top health official of the state of New Jersey says, quote, I'm definitely going to get the coronavirus. We all are. End of quote. She says most people are going to recover just fine, but she says she's confident that we all are going to contract the coronavirus, really. A Stanford professor named John Ioannidis, co-director of the university's Meta Research Innovation Center. He's also professor of medicine, biomedical data science, statistics and epidemiology, and population health. And he suggests that the response to the corona pandemic is worse than the pandemic. He called it a fiasco in the making because we are doing it based upon, quote, utterly unreliable data, close quote. He asked, quote, how long should measures like these be continued if the pandemic churns across the globe unabated? How can policymakers tell if they're doing more good than harm, close quote. He called the data that we're relying on woefully inadequate. A Nobel laureate and a Stanford biophysicist named Michael Levitt agrees. He began analyzing a number of cases worldwide in January, and he says that while there are a lot of people warning of months or even years of massive social disruption and millions of deaths, he says the data simply do not support such a dire scenario. Quote, we need to control, what we need to control is the panic. In the grand scheme, we're going to be just fine, end of quote. Richard Epstein is not an epidemiologist. He is a lawyer, extremely bright. He's a conservative. And he recently gave an interview with Reason Magazine's Nick Gillespie. And he says that the New York Times coronavirus models are likely wrong and alarmist.
Look, I think part of this has to do with the same issue in connection with global warming. I mean, I'm generally a pretty deep skeptic about the fact that the world is going to come to the end. If you start looking at all the short-term indicators, none of them indicate stuff. But the alarmist literature on this stuff is simply enormous, and the immediate data is not carried, is not respected. Well, the same thing seems to be happening here. Everybody starts to think about worst-case hypothesis, and then you figure out how it is you model them. So when the New York Times presented its model with this sharp peak and this sharp decline, you try to figure out what are the assumptions behind it. And essentially what they did is they had themselves a geometric progression with an expansion ratio of 2.3 people getting it for every one person who has it. There's no time interval that's specified in this. And there's no sense that as you go through iteration after iteration, that there's going to be some kind of adaptive responses at all sorts of levels, which will change the numbers. So if you just do this, it's an exercise in geometry and mathematics. Right. It's not an exercise in epidemiology. Let me give you a comparison. When the AIDS thing came out in the 1980s, I was at the time and still am a fellow at the Center for Clinical Medical Ethics at the University of Chicago. And I was working on that. And, you know, I started to understand the way the patterns worked and why it was rapid and then declined. And I got an email from a very distinguished statistician named Bill Kruskal, long deceased, but an important man. And he wrote me the following email. Well, it couldn't have been email, but letter, right, whatever right. it was. He said, hey. He said, you know, I've done the calculations on this, and humanity will be all extinguished as of the year 2006. So I said, Bill, what are your assumptions? Well, he had a geometric progression. He assumed that every person would affect so many people, that the interval between the next generation would take place, and this starts relatively slowly, and by the time you get to 2005, you got 1 billion people dead, and 2006, you got 2 billion people dead. Right. So I wrote him back, and I said, Bill, you're doing math. You're not doing epidemiology. So let me give you the following simple observation, which applies to AIDS, but not, of course, to the COVID virus. He said, if you're a monogamous couple, you're not going to get this stuff unless you get a blood transfusion, which you don't test for. And as the behaviors start to become more fatal, people will start to go away from them. So bathhouses will close down, and even if they don't close down, people aren't going to go to them. So what you have to do is for each iteration, you have to assume two things. One is going to be a longer period between the spread from one person to another. And two, you have to assume that there are going to be fewer people who get it on the opposite end. So those two effects essentially are going to compound with each period. Now, the third feature, which I developed then, and here's another story, is that as you lengthen the period between the first and the second person, there's going to be an evolution in the virus so that it will become more attenuated. So here's the story. I gave this thing to an interviewee from, I think it was either Time or Newsweek magazine, and they called me back the next day and they said, Professor Epstein, you have to be a doctor or an epidemiologist, aren't you? I said, no, I'm just a plain old law professor. No. Well, I can't use your stuff even if it's true because you don't have the right expertise. So they called me three times. I kept on telling them, I'm just a law professor, has a very deep interest in evolutionary theory and sociobiology, and have studied it in quite detail for 20 years, unrelated and related to my legal work. So when they published the story, they put me out as a biologist or a doctor anyhow. Huh. I mean, they couldn't bear to stand it the other way. Well, what happens is, let's just get the simple point down. As you wait between people, there are two effects that you're going to have to worry about. One I talked about in the paper, the other not. And the first is, the longer you go between context, which is going to happen because of all the adaptations we have, the people with severe conditions are going to die off before they spread it. And if it's going to spread, it's going to be spread by people whose virus is less potent, which allows them to live longer. So this means that not only do you have the two factors that I was talking about before, longer gaps and lower contact rates, but you also get yourself a weaker virus. In the early periods, it may not be the very strongest effect, but you're talking about iterations and cycles, which may take place every day or two or three. And suppose you assume a three-day cycle on this thing, and you've got 90 days, you've got 30 iterations, you're going to see an attenuation of the virus. Second thing is, these things tend to mutate very rapidly. Now, what does that mean? Well, when you have a mutation, it could go one of two ways. If it's going to make this stuff more severe, it's not going to pass because people are going to be cautious. If you make it less severe, it's going to enter into the mix. So if you take all of these effects into account, the prediction is that you should see an attenuated virus. And if you look at the stuff that has taken place, for example, in China and Wuhan, this thing was very active until early February. And then all of a sudden, with all these factors working, the thing started to decline. So whereas the front story page story in the newspaper was 150 people dead in Italy, the most important story was that the death rate in China was at that point 12, and the new infection rate was 14. So this means that within 2 months after the beginning, this thing is over, and they're projecting in the United States a peak, which is going to take place 4 months later, that is in July. And then they have it declining, but there's nothing in their function which explains why it declines at all. I mean, the original assumptions is it's just an exploding machine. So once you figure out what the decline is, you have to build that back into the model for the earlier period. This is very bad design work done by professional epidemiologists. It leaves me very, very nervous because they really don't understand the economic incentive structures that applies to viruses just as it applies to human beings.
Now, that's a federal judge named Richard Epstein. As you heard, he is not an epidemiologist, but his analysis is exactly identical to the analysis by Michael Levitt, who's a Nobel laureate and a Stanford biophysicist. He began analyzing the COVID-19 cases in January, and he calculated that China would get through the worst of the coronavirus long before many health experts predicted. And assuming the Chinese numbers are accurate, Levitt's predictions were spot on. Although the number of daily deaths has increased, the rate of that increase in China has begun to ease off. In the view of Levitt, the fact that these cases are being identified at a slower rate is more telling than the number of new cases itself. He calls it an early sign that the trajectory of the outbreak has shifted. Quote, this suggests that the rate of increase in the number of deaths will slow down even more over the next week. End of quote. He predicted that the total number of cases in China would wind up to be about 80,000 with about 3,250 deaths. And as of March 16, China had exactly 80,298 cases and about 3,245 deaths, almost exactly the numbers that Professor Levitt predicted. We come back. Richard Epstein also says that there are reason to believe that the financial repercussions from a government-mandated shutdown are worse than the repercussions from the coronavirus. All of that and more. And Mitch McConnell tees off on Pelosi for ruining a stimulus bill that he says protects the economy and protects families. And President Trump falsely accused of calling the coronavirus a hoax by AOC and by Al Sharpton.
And now, here's Larry Elder.
Hey, Larry, you know, I've got to say, I wish you'd air this. For the past 3 years, almost 4 years now, we have been lied to. We have been double-crossed. We have had the Democrats do anything in their power to take down Donald Trump. And with the impeachment and the Russia and the, what do you call it, the, I'm trying to think of the word for it. I can't think of it right now because I'm pretty upset, but now they expect us to believe everything on this coronavirus. You know, believe this, believe that, believe. You know, I don't know if it's real or if it's something to take down Trump because they've lied to us so much, so often, that you don't know what to believe anymore. And it's a real problem because I'm having a real bad problem with that right now. But they just shut California down. And it's a scary thing. If it's real or is it take down Trump? The world may never know. Thank you.
Yes, Larry. This is in regards to China. You know, they say that they have no more outbreak of the COVID-19. Well, that'd be kind of easy if they just shoot the people and bury them, which probably happened. And, well, I wouldn't trust anything China says at this point. If you do, we're just in for a world of hurt, that's all. And one more thing with the media, you know, they do have a federally licensed FCC license. Now, couldn't that license not be pulled for BSing the American people and spreading propaganda and false statements? Imagine you could do that, take the FCC license.
888-971-SAGE. 888-971-7243. I think the word you were looking for was collusion. And you're absolutely right. That's why so many of us are skeptical when the media goes off on some sort of crusade. Now, the media began reporting about the coronavirus for a number of reasons. Scaring people drives up ratings. And then, of course, the theme became right away that President Trump was incompetently responding to the coronavirus, and now he's being called racist for calling it a Chinese virus. Damn right it makes us skeptical. Thank you very much for those calls. I appreciate it. By the way, I keep calling the Richard Epstein, the man whose interview with Reason Magazine I've been quoting from, playing you excerpts from. He is not a judge. He is a law professor. He teaches law at NYU, New York University. Now, I'm happy to report that we are about ready to go past 40 grand in donations to my Food for the Poor campaign this season to rush food and fresh, clean drinking water to starving kids and their families in Guatemala. How bad is it? Listen to this.
The lack of money means lack of food, which means potentially devastating consequences for her children. Half the children in Guatemala suffer from chronic malnutrition, which manifests itself into stunted growth and lower IQ scores. One out of two children is chronically malnutritious in Guatemala, but in indigenous communities, it's 4 out of 5. 80% of children under 5 years of age. If children are malnutritious during key periods of growth, they won't develop properly. This means future generations may have lower intellectual capacity and productivity that will also slow the progress of the entire country.
Now you can help. Just go to my website, LarryElder.com. Click on the Feed Starving Children banner at the very top. A number of you have contacted us and said you can't find the banner. It's at the very top. Scroll all the way up. Feed Starving Children banner. $320 or just $27 a month gives the blessings of food for a year and water for life to a hungry family of four. Again, go to my website, LarryElder.com. Food for the Four's Anitra Parmalee talks about how your donation will literally transform the lives of mothers who are currently walking hours each way just to bring their children clean, safe water.
Walking at 4 o'clock in the morning to get water. Water is heavy. They can only bring back so much. And to think of the news that there's going to be a community source of water close to them. What will it do for her body, for her family, for the future to have access to water?
Again, go to my website, LarryElder.com. The Feed Starving Family banner is at the very top. Or you can call 855-918-4673. That's 855 918-HOPE. Thank you so very much. Professor Richard Epstein says that the financial repercussions from the government-mandated shutdown is going to do more damage than the coronavirus itself.
There's no way that you can shut this down and give subsidies. There are only three ways you can give subsidies. You have to raise taxes. Not going to happen. You have to borrow money, which is then
already
gives you an
happening interest.
Already happening, but it won't do any good because the interest load is going to be there. Or you could print more money, at which point the money will be worth less because the usual problems about inflation and dilution of the currency will start to take place. So you can't do this on the financial side. The only side that works is to change the productive side of the particular equation. And people have to start to think, which of the things that we're about to impose can we do without? And which of the things can we get rid of? And then what you have to do is you have to unpack the danger. You shut down schools because teachers are afraid to teach students, right? Because they think that everything is going to start to spread. Well, you have to give them some probabilistic stuff. And then if the government had to do something else, this is what I would do. I would say, okay, we're going to run this situation. We want everybody to go out there. And what we will do is for anybody who gets the virus, as of in the course of their employment, indeed anyway, what we will do is we will give you $10,000 towards your medical care, no questions asked. And, well, all of a sudden, you know, that's going to be costing you $1 million under the current situation, or $5 million. It's not going to cost you $20 trillion or whatever it is. I mean, friends of mine have suggested that the GDP will go down by 5%. That strikes me as being very optimistic, given the massive dislocations that take place. And unlike the coronavirus, which will get less serious as you go on in time, the financial dislocations, the financial stresses, the bankruptcies, the reworks will get worse as time goes on. If you look at the legal blogs, as I have done, the single hottest topic now is vis maior, which is, or force majeure, depending whether you like French or you like Latin. It's big force is what it means. And the question is, to what extent, when you have big forces, do you excuse people from the performance of their contractual obligations?
And the so answer this, that, is, this is saying that landlords can evict, that contractors don't necessarily have to follow through, et cetera. I mean, like, this is where you can default on, you know,
we don't even know what it means. Yeah. It just means what it, the simplest case is that you owe a debt and now there's a vis maior, do you have to pay it? Or you're doing a construction contract, do you have to continue? Well, suppose you don't have to continue. You still have to figure out, do you get paid for the work that you've done to date? Are you entitled to your profits? Can the other guy throw you off the plant and simply say that you're in breach? When you start to say that a contract is not going to be enforceable, it doesn't tell you what is going to be done when that non-enforceability takes place. There is a kind of a standard rule about all systems of law. If it's just a question of what's the right and wrong, everybody understands these rules. You don't beat somebody up. You don't basically cheat on a contract. But it turns out if something goes wrong and then something else goes wrong and you have to sequence the wrongs and figure out the remedies, that's when 90% of the action that lawyers do takes place. And all of these contracts are underpowered with respect to this. So to give you what will is one illustration, you have the close down of all these sports arenas. Now, the collective bargaining agreement between the union and the league sort of has a vis maior clause that the players themselves probably don't get paid during this, right?
888-971-SAGEC. More from Professor Richard Epstein when we come back. I'm Larry Elder.
Welcome back to the Pain-Free ReliefFactor.com studios. It's the Sage, Larry Elder.
Hey, Larry, think about this. China's back to work. They're not out for a year and a half. China is back to work. Why are we not looking at that and saying, okay, 2 months max? And, you know, we all go back wearing masks. Like, there's just something so weird about what they're doing here in this country. China's back to work. Why are we freaking out? I don't get it.
888-971-SAGE, 888-971-7243, Larry Elder, ReliefFactor.com studio. I remember when the people at MyPillow came to me and they said, hey, great Eldersky, can you try out a MyPillow? Let us know what you think. Well, I was skeptical. I mean, hey, it's a pillow, right? But to quote number 45, what did I have to lose? So I'll tell you what I lost. I lost interrupted sleep. No more folding the pillow in half. No more flat, lifeless pillows. It stays cool all night long. comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. Try it. Don't like it, you can return it, but you won't. MyPillow also comes with a 10-year warranty. Does your pillow come with a 10-year warranty? And you can throw a MyPillow pillow in your washer and dryer. Comes out like new again. For a limited time, two premium MyPillows for just one low price, plus free shipping. Just go to MyPillow.com, enter promo code Larry, or call 800-890-1843. Again, make sure you use promo code Larry. An actor named Daniel Dae Kim, who starred in Lost and also in Hawaii Five-0, is crediting an anti-malarial drug with his coronavirus recovery. And several Democrats and members of the media have asserted that the president referred to the coronavirus as a hoax. Well, the Washington Post looked at the assertion and gave it four Pinocchios, which is as bad as you can get, but that has not stopped Democrats and members of the media, including members of the media who belong to the Washington Post. And a reporter with the Washington Post recently said the president referred to the coronavirus as a hoax. Someone pointed out that your own newspaper fact-checked it and gave that assertion four Pinocchios. She deleted the tweet and then apologized. Apparently, she doesn't read the Washington Post either. 888-971-SAGE. Virginia is in Columbus, Ohio. Virginia, you're on the Larry Elder Show. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, Larry. Great to talk to you. I'm a little nervous, kind of like being on stage, but not just speaking to the public. I had a question about China's saying that they have no longer reporting any new cases of the virus. I don't know why Americans would believe that in the first place.
Exactly.
That information coming from them.
Exactly.
And but do they have the cure? Do they have the serum cure the people? Has anyone thought of that?
Well, the answer is not to my knowledge. And as far as I'm concerned, we are all quite right to be skeptical about anything coming out of China. After all, these are people that knew about the coronavirus for, what, several weeks, if not 2 months, and didn't say anything? Yeah, so damn right we're skeptical. And China is reporting no new cases for like several days in a row now. Don't know whether or not it's true, but it seems to me a country that is accusing us of unleashing the virus from our military and did not inform the world of the virus for all this time, it seems to me somebody like that has not earned a whole lot of credibility. Now, the president has been giving these briefings sometimes two a day for several days now. Someone has raised the issue of, have you seen Joe Biden anywhere lately? I don't mean Hunter. I mean Hunter's dad. Now, Joe Biden recently gave a speech where he's reading from a teleprompter, and it was his approach to the coronavirus. By the way, he said nothing that President Trump hasn't done already. But if you're wondering what would Joe Biden do, this might give us a bit of an example.
I'm glad the president has finally activated the National Guard. Now we need the armed forces and the National Guard to help with hospital capacity, supplies, and logistics. We need to activate the Reserve Corps of doctors and nurses and beef up the number of responders dealing with these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough on that. The president must use the Defense Production Act.
Wouldn't you feel more comfortable with the steady hand of Joe Biden at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue during this coronavirus pandemic?
I'm glad the president has finally activated the National Guard. Now we need the armed forces and the National Guard to help with hospital capacity, supplies, and logistics. We need to activate the Reserve Corps of doctors and nurses and beef up the number of responders dealing with these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough on that. The president must use the Defense Production Act.
Wow.
You cannot be serious.
Hey, it's early. You know, he was at some teleprompter malfunction, I guess. We're going to talk about the members of the media and the Democrats who have repeated the assertion that President Trump referred to the coronavirus as a hoax. No, he didn't.
It's the Sage, Larry Elder.
Tony from St. Paul, Minnesota. I just watched the press conference with the reporters, and they do more to fear, bring upon fear to the public. One was saying,
"Wait, hi, what do you tell the mother who has three children sitting at the breakfast table that they might all die?"
They remind me of like arsonists or firebugs looking for a fire to just run out and throw gasoline on. That's the best metaphor I can think of. They really pride themselves in a phony, caring thing. All they're interested in is the next election and getting him out of there and making him look bad. They have no, they hide their true feelings by this phony caring.
Oh, what are you going to do with that?
Well, thanks, Larry. You're doing a good job.
888-971-SAGE, 888-971-7243, Larry Elder, ReliefFactor.com studio. You can go to my website, LarryElder.com, and subscribe to our podcast for only 99 cents for the first month. The article I told you about that was co-written by Stephen Moore called Obama's Bad Stimulus Example is up on the website under News to Know. There's also a link to a special report on the coronavirus. So just go to my website, LarryElder.com, and be sure and follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. It's an actor named Daniel Dae Kim. He starred in Lost and in the revived Hawaii Five-0. He contracted the coronavirus and says an anti-malarial drug helped him recover.
And here's what I consider to be the secret weapon, hydroxychloroquine. This is a common anti-malarial drug that has been used with great success in Korea in their fight against the coronavirus. And yes, this is the drug that the president mentioned the other day. It is also the drug that Dr. Anthony Fauci cautioned us about. He said that evidence that the drug was promising is anecdotal, and that is correct. It means it wasn't studied, and it's only based on personal accounts. Well, add my name to those personal accounts because I am feeling better.
Al Sharpton says that President Trump referred to the coronavirus as a hoax.
And this is the same administration that, as you reminded us, and other guests reminded us, that started with saying this was a hoax, then went to this is going to disappear.
New York Times reporter David Leonhardt also claims that the president referred to the coronavirus as a hoax.
I mean, the president's handling this has been terrible. He spent weeks denying it. He called it a hoax. And
Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC, which I watched, so you don't have to.
Just over 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump called the coronavirus a hoax.
Representative Tim Ryan, Democrat from Ohio, ran for president.
I think we already saw that. The government was slow to pick up on this. I don't want to get into political discussion, but the leader of the country calling this a hoax for...
Sherrod Brown, Senator from Ohio.
Well, I go back a few days when, I mean, Governor DeWine, a Republican, is someone whom I've watched him and talked to him frequently during all of this with the coronavirus. He has been as good or better than any governor in the country anticipating. He shut the schools down when there were only three. I think there were only three people diagnosed at that point. He understood. I mean, he was looking at this and dealing with this when for weeks when Trump was still saying that it was a hoax.
No. Now, the Washington Post, that has not endorsed a Republican in its entire history, to give you some idea of their bias, even the Washington Post fact check gave the assertion that the president referred to the coronavirus as a hoax for Pinocchio's as bad as you can get. They're referring to what the president said in South Carolina at one of his rallies. He was referring to the media's assertion that he was fumbling the response to the coronavirus, that he had dropped the ball, that he didn't know what he was doing. That's what he meant by the media's next hoax. Even the Washington Post agreed.
Now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. You know that, right? Coronavirus. They're politicizing it. We did one of the great jobs, you say, how's President Trump doing? They go, oh, not good, not good. They have no clue. They don't have any clue. They can't even count their votes in Iowa. They can't even count. No, they can't. They can't count their votes. One of my people came up to me and said, Mr. President, They tried to beat you on Russia, Russia, Russia. That didn't work out too well. They couldn't do it. They tried the impeachment hoax. That was on a perfect conversation. They tried anything. They tried it over and over. They've been doing it since you got in.
Now, waiting for the part where the president called the coronavirus a hoax. Where is it?
It's all turning. They lost. It's all turning. Think of it. Think of it. And this is their new hoax. But, you know, we did something that's been pretty amazing. We're 15 people in this massive country. And because of the fact that we went early, we could have had a lot more than that. We're doing great. Our country is doing so great. We are so unified.
That's what he said. I repeat, the Washington Post gave the assertion that the president referred to the coronavirus as a hoax for Pinocchio's. That has not stopped AOC.
It is absolutely needed. You know, we are thankful to anyone who's pitching in on this effort, but we are nowhere near the beds, the capacity that we need in this country. And we're hearing it every step of the way from this administration. First, we were hearing it was a hoax.
Sigh. Again, Joe Biden gave a speech about his coronavirus response, what it would be. And here's what he said.
I'm glad the president has finally activated the National Guard. Now we need the armed forces and the National Guard to help with hospital capacity, supplies, and logistics. We need to activate the Reserve Corps of doctors and nurses and beef up the number of responders dealing with these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough on that. The president must use the Defense Production Act.
CNN's Jeff Zeleny, not impressed.
But Biden trying to say, I've been there, I can pull the levers of government, I'm very different.
He is. He's trying to say that. The question is, who's listening and is that being heard? The Biden campaign is, you know, dealing with several things. One, they are trying to become the general election and nominee here. Bernie Sanders is still in, but they are looking beyond him. But they're not quite ready for this moment. I mean, Joe Biden is an old-fashioned, handshaking politician. It was clear that they are not ready for the communications required for this. I was on that conference call with him on Friday afternoon, and it was an old-fashioned conference call that barely made any news coverage.
It's the Sage, Larry Elder. Do not leave town. America, we have a country to save. And now, here's Larry Elder.
Hey, Shalom, Larry, first-time caller. And if you can remember, a lot of the people said that they were going to leave the country if Donald Trump became president, where they did leave mentally. That's why we've had so much hell in this country concerning them. Now everything is coming to bite them in the hind part. So if you can remind the public that they did leave mentally, but they did leave physically. And now that we have this crisis going on, a lot of them can't even return back to the very nation that they said they hated in the first place. All right, take care.
888-971-SAGE, 888-971-7243. Larry Elder, ReliefFactor.com studio. The zip poll question I left you with on Friday was, California governor has ordered the entire state to stay home indefinitely because of the coronavirus. Do you think this is an overreaction? 73% of respondents called it an overreaction. 27% said no. Here's the one for tonight. I'll give you the results tomorrow. Have you been tested for coronavirus? Either yes or no. In order to participate, you must be a member of the Zip community. Go to your app store, download the Zip app by searching on the Zip Poll USA, and you have to use my code SAGE. Now, there's a documentary on the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. We talked about why it spread so rapidly because of the war, because of the mass movement of men across continents, and it also talks about why it got its name.
Nearly all the ships carrying American troops to war arrived at the port in Brest, France. In April of 1918, just as the flu outbreak was dying down at Camp Funston, an epidemic began in Brest and slowly began spreading throughout northern France. Despite the illness spreading in the city, more and more troops poured in. Healthy men would land, become infected, and then ship out to new duty stations and to the front line, carrying the disease through every small town and hamlet through which the armies traveled. The flu tore across France and followed the front lines into Belgium and the Netherlands. It jumped across the lines of war and began infecting the German army, actually affecting the outcomes of battle since so many troops were too sick to fight. It jumped from the German army to the German people. By May, it had reached Italy, where it crossed the Mediterranean and surged into North Africa. It also arrived in England by May, riding back on boats with troops heading home. Infection and death rates began to skyrocket in Spain and Portugal. The flu gained its name, the Spanish flu, from the early infection and high mortality rate in Spain, where reported 8 million died in May. Spain was neutral in World War I, and as a result, it was one of the only countries that was reporting the news without strict government censorship. Most countries didn't want to reveal to their enemies that they were battling an epidemic and didn't want to affect their people's morale, so the governments pressured the media to hide and downplay the severity of the virus. However, in neutral Spain, the press was free to report the news accurately. Newspaper headlines in Spain screamed of an epidemic that was killing millions, while other countries only whispered of the flu. The world believed the flu was worse than Spain, when in actuality, Spain was the only one talking about it at first.
So it's called the Spanish flu only because Spain was honest enough to admit it was occurring, not because it started there. I'm Larry Elder.
That's enough. Put down the mic.
All across America,
the mic has been dropped.
The Larry Elder Show.